This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap. It is Wednesday, it's the 8th of February 2023, and we're talking all about what Microsoft has done to Bing to make us actually maybe want to use it again.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your host, Stephen Scott.
Hey everybody, hope you're well today. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm not on my own some today. You might be pleased to hear that, actually. You might be saying, do you know what? I'm so glad, because this guy, he just likes the sound of his own voice. You know, Sean's gone away, he's not well. He's not going to be back for a while, and Stephen's just going to talk to himself. Well, no, hopefully not to myself. I mean, hopefully you're listening. That would be nice. I'm getting the impression you're there. So, you know, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for subscribing. All those things that you say these days. Thank you for liking. Do people like this? I don't know. Anyway, we do have a guest with us. His name is Michael Babcock. You might know that name because he is a regular contributor on the Kelly and Ramia show, that other show on AMI Audio. You know, them. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Stephen. That other show that does more than just tech. And you gotta tell people, you. Follow us on your favorite podcast platform.
Is that all the advertising done, is it?
Yep.
I cannot. Is it this whole nonsense with the like and the subscribes and the... I'm just not into that. I'm really not. I remember the days. I remember the good old days when you would come on air and you go, hey, we're on 103.4 FM. And if you couldn't get us on 103.4 FM... then you couldn't get us. That was it. Tough luck. Nowadays, we're on everything, including your toaster, your teeth fillings, everything it seems to be you can find your radio on. It's just unbelievable. I can't keep up. I don't like it.
There's a little screen on my coffee pot. I'm waiting for Double Tap to be on there as well.
It probably is. There's probably a fridge somewhere playing this out. It's ridiculous. It really is. But listen, aside all that, this is me starting the show off sounding like I am absolutely, you know, hating tech. Obviously, I'm not, because, you know, that's what this show's about, allegedly. It's a tech show, honest. I have to say that legally. But yeah, look, first off, before we get into the tech, because the big news today, of course, is Microsoft. They've brought out a new version of Bing. We'll get into that, and we're going to talk about what the implications are. You've been playing around with this a lot. We talked about it yesterday. With Robin Christofferson, he was on. He was talking very eloquently about the whole subject. He is a lord, you know. Did you know that? He's a lord.
I learned that on your show.
He's a lord of all he surveys. Which,
yes, Lord Robin.
Appeared to be not very much by the sounds of what he told me yesterday. But yeah, we learned a lot about how he uses it and how, you know, his feelings are about it. I mean, a fantastic example yesterday, I think. A terrifying example, I think, actually, where he talked about how his neighbour had to basically give up his web design business because people were figuring out they could use ChatGPT to build a website.
That's scary.
Scary stuff, right? And we want to talk about that because there are real-life implications to this technology. You know, we've heard a lot that AI will take over the jobs. I didn't think it'd be today.
Right. It seems like this, and we'll probably get into it more, but it seems like November, when ChatGPT was actually released, like, things shifted. And if you're not seeing it and you're not in the tech world, I think it's going to take a little while for some people to realize that. Yeah. But things have changed, and it's a whole new landscape out there now.
Listen, let's geek out about that in a minute. But first off, about you. I mean, the show's normally about me, but, you know, okay, well, I'll bend. You know, so let's talk about you. So you are a regular contributor with Kelly and Ramia. Mm-hmm. Is that your only claim to fame on AMI, or would you run the place? I mean, I don't know.
No, that's my only claim to fame with AMI. Here's the funny thing. I think I've talked to Mr. F once in the last 3 years that I've been with AMI, and so maybe that's how I only stick with one.
You don't want to do any more than that, honestly.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you don't want to. He's not a tech guy, honestly. He's not going to. You can tell him all you want about tech. He's not interested.
He'll just tell people to go listen to that Double Tap show.
Yeah, so he'll go listen to that Double Tap show. They know about tech. We've fooled him for years. That's how we're still here. That's how we continue to survive. He has no idea. But no, so you're on Kelly. God bless you, Mr. F. So tell us about that. So you're on that show. And for people who listen to this show, who may listen to this show and not hear other shows, and frankly, it's a damn disgrace if you're not checking out all the other wonderful content on AMI Audio and AMI TV and AMI Telly if you speak French. I think that covers me. Does that get us a new contract? So tell me about what you do on the show and tell me about your involvement with AMI generally then.
Yeah, so I got started on AMI. Did you know the late Tom Decker?
The name does not ring a bell. Feel bad. Should I feel bad?
Yeah, Tom had these cool things. They were called Feel and See books, and it was a tactile representation of what the iPhone looked like, and so you could feel and orientate yourself to it. And he was a big advocate of explore by touch versus flicking, because if you can mentally paint a picture of where things were on the phone, you can be more efficient and double tap in the place that you need to in order to activate it. And Tom and I got connected in late 2018, I think it was, and he started telling me about this AMI thing, and I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about, never heard of it, because, you know, living in Oregon, I wasn't familiar with AMI at all.
You're in Oregon, right? What do you know about anything, right?
Exactly.
You know, where the cows live.
Yeah, the cows, and we have lots and lots of trees.
Oh, that's nice.
So he told me to listen. I listened, and I started listening to Kelly. It was called Kelly and Co. then, when they were just on audio. And I called in and I left him some feedback. And I said, "Hey, Kelly, Romeo, why do you guys never talk about Android? It's always iPhone this, iPhone that, nothing to do about Android." And apparently, my feedback got back to Kelly, and Kelly had talked to Tom, and Tom was like, "Yeah, you should really reach out to Michael. He knows what he's talking about." I don't know what type of lies he was telling Kelly, but it gave Kelly enough incentive to call me one day and say, "Hey, are you interested in coming in and talking on a monthly Android segment?" And I said, "Sure." This was in July. We did my first test run in September. October, I switched back to the iPhone and started talking about the iPhone all the time.
That's the way in, right? Is that you're not going to try that here, are you? Because we're wise to that over here.
No, you're good to go. The thing is I told my wife, I said, "Mallory, I'm concerned," and she goes, "Why?" I said, "Because I'm here to talk about Android. Now I got an iPhone. What am I going to do?" So with the help of Kelly and Ramya, we transitioned it into more of a tech segment, just overall, because I'm always reading about things. I've Top Tech Tidbits is the first email I read every Thursday. And so I get all my details, and then we started transitioning it to twice a month. And then Ramya reached out to me and said, "Hey, can you be a regular contributor every morning? And by the way, can you be the first contributor segment of the show? Would you be okay with that?" And I'm like, "Well, never done this before. Sure, let's try it." And it's been like that since forever. And I was super excited to say I was the first contributor when we switched to video on January 9th. And honestly, for me, video is not horrible. I just talk into a microphone and get guidance of, "Yeah, Michael, can you move your microphone out of the way a little bit?" But for me, it's just talking and remembering that I need to look generally towards the camera.
Yeah, I have this when I'm on with Dave Brown in the morning. I'm usually on a Thursday morning with Dave promoting. I have no idea what I'm promoting. They ask me to come on. I barely know what time it is. You know, I just come on, I turn up and I say things, and apparently people like it. And I've often been told, you know, that the microphone, you have to move the microphone. I say, "Oh, is it in front of my face?" And they say, "No, not yet. Keep moving it." Bring it in front. But no, I have to say it's been really interesting, and actually that is echoing, I guess, the same feelings I've had about this show, because this show, of course, used to be weekly. Some say it still should be, and I disagree with that, but I think it's interesting that we have moved to these daily models. So, like, this show has moved to daily. Look, there's no lie here. I approached Mr. F, you know, I he had a couple of drinks in him. I took the opportunity. I said, "Look, you know, I think the show should be daily." I think I caught him off guard. And in the end, you know, he relented and he said, "Look, actually, let's try this out." And I think we all felt it was a bit of an experiment to try this out and see, could this be a daily thing? I mean, when I left RNIB in, when was it, November 2021, you know, dabbled in my own podcast, trying things out. And really, it was just a vent for me, really, because I'd come off daily air, you know, being on air every day talking about things. And I just wanted somewhere to go blah. Right. And a podcast seemed like the way to do it because, of course, the internet is just full of people going blah. So I thought I'll join in. And when I realized that there was such an appetite for technology every day, that was one thing. But then when we started doing the show, and then, of course, when I moved away from that and we started doing Double Tap Daily, what I realized was that there's so much tech to talk about.
Yeah.
Have you noticed this? It seems like there's an explosion in the amount of news around technology every single day. I mean, we sometimes record the show in advance. We'll sometimes say, well, let's do the show the night before. For whatever reason, maybe I'm out the next day and I don't have time, or, you know, a schedule conflict or whatever it is between Sean and I. Although, well, not with Sean, obviously. He's sitting in his shed most of the time. But for me, maybe I'm going somewhere, I'm doing something. So we'll record the show in advance. And then what happens is I get up the next morning and boom, Microsoft have announced something. Google have announced something. Amazon have dropped a new product. Oh, that's brilliant, right? Okay, now I'm going to have to re-record the whole show. And we do. And we do it because we love what we do. But we also do it because that's what our audience expects. We want to be up to date. And these days, there's just so much to talk about.
There is. And I have a dog in the background who wants to share his opinion about technology as well. And he even tells me, you know, technology changes every day. The fun thing about this job, though,
what's the dog's name?
The dog's name is Dakota, but Dakota. He doesn't listen to his name at all. I mean, you know, he's got to tell me there's probably a FedEx guy dropping something new off and he's letting me know
he's
about it.
He's about to have his head ripped off his body or her body. I mean, you know.
Well, to be fair, we did not plan this perfectly and I didn't think about it because the boys are just getting out of school too. So he's like, kids, come play with me. But, you know, that's part of being in audio and doing stuff live.
Don't worry about it because we'll re-record the show tomorrow anyway. That's how this show works. We just re-record it every hour until eventually it gets on air.
And you'll use technology to replace what I say with my voice, right?
Well, we'll get into that as well, yeah, because you've been dabbling in that world as well. But, I mean, you must have noticed this huge change. What is it? I mean, it's not, and I have to say, it's not just mainstream either, is it? I mean, I've noticed it even in the accessibility space. Google having that event, we if you remember the episode we did where we tried to cover the Google event live alongside the actual event going on. That was an interesting experience. But, you know, in amongst all that, we're both, Sean and I, are sitting there and we hear the voice of Molly bark. And mm-hmm. we go, oh, hang on, what? Hello? What, if I'm honest, I heard the screen reader first. And it's like that bat signal. You just go, oh, yeah. Screen reader. And I thought, oh, it's a blind person in the room. And then suddenly Molly talks. And we realized there's a whole segment on accessibility at this Google event, which is a mainstream event. So, I mean, you know, accessibility is so mainstream now. Game Awards recently, the big game conference awards. It's incredible, actually, how much is out there.
I think the biggest thing that has been more clear, and I don't remember who the first person to say this was, but someone in the tech industry had brought up the point that, you know, maybe mainstream needs to focus on accessibility a little more, because accessibility could be something that anyone could use at any point. And if you don't know what's available, you're going to be completely lost. And as a tech professional, you should at least know what's available out there. It astounds me when you hear these stories of people going to Apple and Apple saying, well, your screen isn't working. I don't know what's going on. And it's because someone has screen curtain on. And Apple employees, yeah, they shouldn't know everything, but it astounds me with how much mainstream accessibility both is there and still isn't there.
I love going into computer stores. I did it in Best Buy in Canada. I've done it in equivalent stores in America and in the UK. I am a worldwide annoyance. I go in and I turn on all the screen readers, usually on the most annoying devices, like, you know, the Samsung Watch. That's always a real irritant. Try and get TalkBack turned off on that when you know nothing. That is brilliant. And just walking away, just leaving that, and just, you know, just standing around, you know, and just waiting for someone to just, this phone, this thinker will not stop talking. Why won't it stop talking? It is brilliant. I recommend we all do it.
You should take some Ambio headsets into one of those stores. That sounds like a podcast right there. Mr. Happ, are you listening? That's the new show.
That's the new show. Undercover with Double Tap. That doesn't sound right. We'll work on that. We'll work on that one. It's a new day in search, says Microsoft's CEO Satya Nadella at the event that announced Microsoft's new version of its search engine, Bing. And this has been powered by an upgraded version of the same artificial intelligence technology that underpins this chatbot we've been talking about for months now, ChatGPT. The company is launching the product alongside new artificial intelligence enhanced features for its Edge browser, promising that the tool will provide a new experience for browsing the web and finding information online. This is the story of the day. We're recording this show. When is this? Tuesday night? Yep. We're recording this show. Late for me, kind of, you know, dinner time for you, I guess, supper. What do you call it? Tea? Supper? Dinner?
We call it dinner, but you keep putting me in the Eastern time zone, and I'm actually in Pacific, so it's like mid-afternoon.
Oh, wow.
It's 3:20 here right now, but to be fair, I think in one of our emails I said Eastern just because it's the easiest universal time zone.
So. I have no idea where I am anymore in this world. I am completely lost, but right now in front of me it says it's 11:24 p.m., so there you go. So that's as we're recording this. Of course, there is another event going to be happening as you're listening to this show today. Being Wednesday the 8th, there is another event going on, which is a Google event. And we're going to talk a little bit about that because while we won't be able to cover it in the same way today, we will talk about the reasons why that event has happened. That has been quite interesting. But right off the bat, the big news story, Microsoft making Edge smarter, making Bing smarter. Tell me your immediate thoughts, Michael, on this breaking news story.
My immediate thoughts are it's about time because I've been using ChatGPT to get information, both information that's accurate and information that's not. And I think the follow-up thought is, if they're using a tool like this, how accurate is the information going to be? And if search engines become something like ChatGPT, how is going to be the best way to research the information that you actually get from the search engine that's using ChatGPT or similar technologies to see how accurate that information it's giving you is?
Yeah, and that's a really good point because actually for a long time, and I say a long time, I'm talking a couple of months really, what we've known about ChatGPT is that it's very good for a lot of, I'd say, nerdy causes. You know, if you want to code something or you want to build a website like we were talking about with Robin yesterday, that's all great, but that's not how most people will use this. And Microsoft showed off a couple of examples. And we can't play you any audio because this was not an event that was actually happening in on live stream, so we couldn't bring you any audio from it. And in fairness, I think they were just going to be showing you web searches. So maybe not the best in audio, but they did show a couple of examples searches. So, for example, querying Bing for recipes, travel tips, and shopping for furniture from IKEA. All right. So in one demo, Bing was asked to create an itinerary for each day of a 5-day trip to Mexico City. And the question was answered entirely by the chatbot, which described a rough itinerary alongside links to sources for more information. Now, bang, that's the first thing. Links to sources. Mm-hmm. Because previously, using this OpenAI chatbot, the ChatGPT, you weren't getting sources. You were just getting an answer. It wasn't leading you off anywhere. It wasn't giving you any extra information. It was just saying, hey, go and visit that big cathedral-y place because that's nice to go to. Everyone goes there. But it wasn't telling you any more than that or telling you or giving you links to sources. And that is something which I think is key to the success of any of these chatbots is actual links to sources.
And I don't know how much you've looked into how ChatGPT, and I go back to ChatGPT because it's the most widely known at this time version of this, but really ChatGPT isn't doing any searching. It's just saying, let's take this knowledge that I have of that specific topic and put in what we think is going to be the next word. And that's why it takes a little while to build out your responses because it's grabbing to say, oh, this word will fit here, this word will fit here. And it's not actually doing any sort of research. It says, this makes sense when you put these words together.
Yes, Johnny Five, right? It's been eating encyclopedias for lunch. It's got all this knowledge and it can give you an answer. But what we can do now, and this is the next step here, is that we can now bring that knowledge into all the other information that's out there already and turn it into something that's, I guess, ultimately, if you were to try to describe this, it is about making search more human. That's what it's about, isn't it? It's about giving you more human style responses and giving you more understandable search results instead of saying, you know, like that example there, five things to do in Mexico City or wherever it is, you know, and it'll come up with 10 million pages of results. Instead of that, it will give you very specific results. Now, it's not doing, and what I've seen just with the limited information that I've got here, it doesn't seem to do what ChatGPT did in that it just gives you that paragraph of information. It does give you that standard search result page, but the results are much more curated. They seem to be much more, a much clearer sense of results, a bit more, you know, very specific and a lot less results as well, because it's gathering information together. Now, of course, you know what I'm going to ask you, because this is going to be the first question everybody's going to ask in our community. How accessible is this going to be? Well, look, I'm going to put it out there. If Bing is accessible now, I can't imagine it's not going to be accessible going forward. And I can't imagine Microsoft aren't going to make it accessible, right? I mean, can I say that? I think I can.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that's going to be an issue. I actually don't use Bing. I am a Googler. DeMossi has tried to get me to
Michael,
switch over
nobody
to
nobody uses Bing. That's the point. This is why they're doing this, because nobody uses Bing.
So maybe this is part of the change, but I went to Bing.com, you know, multitasking, and in the edit field with the content that VoiceOver reads on the Mac, instead of it saying search, like is what Google says, and someone might stop there and be like, what do I need to search for? What keywords do I need to search for? Mm. They've updated it. So now it says, quote, ask me anything. So now you can search in the form of a question, which will then get you the results because it's prompting you, ask me anything.
That's interesting. So even the language of search is changing, right? It's search was, where's the nearest Chinese restaurant that's open at midnight? Because, you know, I'm feeling kind of hungry, which, you know, as the time ticks on, I'm kind of thinking that. But instead of that, it's going to say, ask me anything. It's like, okay, tell me all the different Chinese restaurant options within, you know, the radius where I live. And it will go off and it will give you that information and much better results. I mean, actually, that's a good example, because what would happen is you might get one result and you'll get maybe a phone number and a website address. Whereas now you might get, you know, a curation of all those results in a much easier, maybe this is the accessibility part we're maybe overlooking actually now I think about this, that because it's bringing those results together, it'll actually make it easier to search for us as well. We're not having to go through reams and reams of information. We don't have to, you know, H our way through life to get to the result we're looking for, heading, hoping we get to the final one we're looking for. I don't know.
Yeah, and I searched just a quick sample, what's going on in the news, and if I use, which is a very dangerous search to do, but if you do heading navigation, you can get to different publications with some, if you VO right arrow, it gives you more information about the webpage. So it looks right now, and has this even rolled out to everyone? Or
no.
That's what I thought. So, you know, maybe I should have given Bing a little more.
Well, yeah. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Now we start to look at it as a tangible option, whereas I don't think most of us did for a long time. I mean, I certainly didn't. I remember when I got my PC installed back in here because I couldn't. I know that's sacrilege to you, but I use my Mac for a lot of things, but I need my PC for my editing, at least for now, until I figure out how Reaper works. And you're going to be a big part of that because you're going to teach me how to use it. But you know, and not on air, I should. And in a new 200-part series coming to AMI Audio, Stephen Scott and Michael Babcock are going to beat each other to death over Reaper, trying to figure out how it works. But yeah, no, that's not going to happen on air. But what I will say is that you know, when I eventually move to Reaper, that's what I'll probably end up back on the Mac. But in the meantime, I have the PC. And when I set it up, I remember going to the settings, and the first thing I searched on Bing was, how do I make Google Chrome or Google my default search engine?
Search engine in Edge. Yep. I bet that's probably one of the most popular Bing searches.
Yeah. But that may change. Now, in addition to this, and this is the interesting thing as well, in addition to the new Bing, Microsoft is launching two new AI-enhanced features for the Edge browser itself, Chat and Compose. Now, this will be interesting. So these will be embedded within Edge's sidebar. And what chat will do will allow you to summarize the web page or document you're looking at ask questions about its contents.
Oh,
so like a mini search,
huge.
Right? A little search within a website. While Compose will act as a writing assistant. So that will help you to generate text from emails to social media posts, say a Twitter, a tweet or a Facebook post or whatever it might be. And you can do it all based on just a few starting prompts. So that's two new areas as well. So, you know, separate from Bing, which has obviously the AI capability, the ChatGPT, Edge itself gets smarter as well. That's pretty cool.
That is kind of cool. And have you ever used Microsoft Editor in Chrome or Edge or one of your browsers?
Only by accident.
So I used it because I tried using that other tool, Grammarly, and I did not have a good experience with it. So someone suggested, just offhandedly, like they assumed everyone knew that this was a thing, hey, you could try Microsoft Editor, and it works very well with JAWS. And since I'm in customer service, I gotta kind of look like I know what I'm talking about and write in a professional manner. And Microsoft Editor helped with that a lot. But I think having this additional compose feature available in Edge, I might even download Edge to the Mac if it's available on there, just because that really has me intrigued.
Yeah, I don't know yet. That's another interesting question. There's a lot of information that is not as quite widely available. If only there was a way I could search for that information, then I could tell you. But yeah, once Bing is up and running properly, I can do my job properly. But if it does, and I imagine it will, this will roll out. And it is going to be a slow rollout. There seems to be a bit of a wait list to join the new ChatGPT-enabled Bing. Edge features will probably start rolling out soon, I'd imagine. But it is a very interesting time for sure. But what I want to talk about next, we'll take a short break, but I want to just, when we come back, focus on some of the other aspects of this, because it's not all a walk in the garden. This will have impact on people, and significant impact on jobs in particular. We'll talk about that next. This is Double Tap.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and email us feedback at doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. This is Double Tap. Now, back to the show.
Hey guys, unapologetically geeking out today with Michael Babcock here on Double Tap with me today. And we're talking all about Microsoft, of course, and the big news that they've launched an updated version of Bing, or at least will be rolling out an updated version of Bing with all kinds of fancy new features. And of course, the main one being the ability to search and get much more human-like responses, much more natural responses, and actually be able to search more naturally as well, I think, which is going to be key. Now, this is interesting, Michael, because of course the big topic here is the technology, and that's the big story. But of course, there is a bigger story in the wings, and that is the impact this is going to have on jobs. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella spoke exclusively, not to us, but to CBS this morning on Monday about some of the concerns that people are having around the capabilities of this new technology. Let's listen into that.
What do you say to people watching who are worried that what you're building might make the economy grow, but will disrupt their job and their life in ways they cannot predict?
First of all, it's a great point, and I think even there, I feel like what this does really is create the draft. But the draft has to be read by somebody, has to be edited by somebody, approved by somebody.
And net, net, you think it will create more jobs than it will take?
I believe it creates more, I'd call it, both satisfaction in current jobs and net new jobs.
Wow, so better jobs, at more satisfaction in jobs, more money. Excellent. I'm all in. Do you believe any of that?
I actually do. And the reason is because I'm using ChatGPT in what may be a unique way than what other people do. I don't want to say I have ADHD, but I have focus issues where if I sit down to write an email to Steven or I sit down to record an audio to someone and want to send that to them, I will sit here and second guess myself all day long and say, oh, maybe I should reword it. Oh, maybe I should do it this way. Maybe I should do that. And send will never get hit. What I have found myself doing, though, is writing my ideas in drafts and saying, hey, can you write a board report? Here are the things that I need to include in the board report. And then I send that into ChatGPT. Then I read over the contents of the email and say, hey, this looks good. Oh, I need to take that line out. I actually didn't mean it that way, but I could reword it or just take it out and then put it in the email itself and then hit send. And for me, I find that to be a lot more reliable than using my own mind to say, hey, let's get this done and then go out and get it sent, because I won't do it. But more importantly, I need to know how to properly address and ask for the information so things come out the way I expect them to. And I think that's going to create a whole new industry of jobs, teaching people what's the best way to interact with these ChatGPT systems.
That's a really good point. But I want you to just back up a bit, because that point you made about sending the email. Now, you've said to me a few times in emails and in conversations we've had that you use ChatGPT to send an email to me, right?
Yep.
So give me an example of that. Give me an example of the email and tell me what it is you put into ChatGPT in order to create that email.
Of course, I knew you were going to put me on the spot here. So just an overview thing is, you know, an email that I sent earlier today had a list of different things that I learned about on a call. So, for example, I put, you know, the elder blind organization or the elder blind department lost their funding. The organization or the state government wants a quarterly review of all employees of this agency. And I put something else in there, something about how our next meeting is going to be April 26 or something. And I gave that type of detail and it wrote a professional email. And I said, write this to Cassie. And it said, "Dear Cassie, I hope this message finds you well. The latest board meeting that I attended included this information," and then it expanded a little bit. And then it said, you know, have a great day, or "I look forward to your responses" and stuff like that. And then it said, "Best regards, Michael." Now, what that will do is it makes sure that I keep myself personalized in the email. Sometimes I just say, "Here's the information," and hit send and forgot to tell people have a good day. But it also does have a negative effect because I set up a agenda and a meeting that I was a chair of a committee for, and I sent it over to the members, and I didn't even think about it. I read it and it looked good to me, but I sent it over to the members. And then yesterday I was on the meeting and one of the ladies on there, she goes, "I thought it was," because I told her, I said, "I used ChatGPT to write that email." She goes, "I thought it was a little weird that you were introducing yourself to me. We work on everything together." So, I mean, it has pros and cons. Everyone says AI is artificial intelligence. And I don't know if I heard this somewhere, but I tell everyone, I interpret AI as augmented intelligence because we already know what we want to do in a lot of cases. Sometimes it's just putting all those pieces together to make something that actually sounds like what you want to present to people.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, what you said there really resonates with me about the way that you start an email or you sit down to do something. I am with you on this. I think there's something, I'm with you. I don't think it's ADHD for me. I think it's, I don't know what it is, but I sit down and I have the intention of writing an email. Funnily enough, before we started talking, I had an email sitting I had to do and I thought I really must get to that email. And people say to me, "You're terrible with email, Stephen." And I say, "I know, because I have to think about it."
Yeah.
And you know, I can't just go back and say, "Yeah, whatever." I have to think beyond. And that's maybe the problem. I have to engage with a brain, which I don't have. So, you know, that's where the intelligence can come in from artificially or augmented. I can have that. But, you know, that just really is interesting to me because I would probably use it in the same way. And I kind of love that is one thing I do. I do take a lot of notes and scribble notes on my computer, just typing away, you know, especially imagine watching like an Apple event and you just taking notes as you go, as I do often for the show, and then being able to create a post out of that.
So if listeners read Top Tech Tidbits and this goes out on, if this episode goes out on Wednesday the 8th, on Thursday the 9th, if you scroll down to the podcast announcements, the description that I wrote for today's live podcast came from me writing down a quick 2 to 4 word summary of what each of the questions were on the live show. And then I took those to ChatGPT and I said, "Hey, write me a under 900 character summary of this specific call. Here are the things that were talked about." And then I hit enter and it came up with that description and I didn't have to think about it, but I was still giving it the data that it needed from the live call because, well, I mean, right now it can't transcribe audio right this second without someone writing a program. I have also dropped in shorter form content transcripts for, you know, if you get your voice transcripts, because I'm using Whisper AI, and it will give me a pretty good transcript. Drop it into ChatGPT and say, "Hey, create show notes." And I can also say something like, "Hey, create me five Twitter posts promoting this," which is good. And yes, sometimes I do still say thank you, and I'm not sure if I need to.
You're giving me so many ideas. People are going to notice a significant change to the show notes of this program. Because if you go to my show notes, it's pretty much just, I spoke to this guy about the thing and, you know, it was really interesting. And I think there's a link here and that's all good. And I would love to do more with it. I just don't have, I'm not a writer. I am not a writer. That is not me.
Nope.
I can talk day and night, but I cannot write.
Now, if you take your talking and you turn that into transcripts with something like Whisper available on Alphonic, and there are ways to automate that using Hazel on the Mac and watch folders in Alphonic. So you just record the content in Reaper, render it, and then it gives you text back, or you can do that locally. But then you just take that in. The gotcha with the whole ChatGPT and transcripts is it chokes on anything about 20 minutes or longer. So you do have to do it in little blocks if you have a longer form show. So it works great for short form.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't need a Bing in my life. I need a Babcock. That's what I need. See, I'm not searching on Bing. I'm using Babcock to get answers because he's got all the answers. This is brilliant. I'm learning so much here.
Yeah, but my answers cost invoices. Just saying.
Well, in that case, then back to Bing. But when it comes to, I mean, actually, funnily enough, you sent me in a demo of Hazel, didn't you? I don't think we've used it yet.
I sent you a demo of Hazel. I have some launch bar content, which Demasi brought up on Twitter, and I think you bought that too. I am liking being on the Mac because of some of these automated tools that we'll have to probably come back and talk about in the future.
We absolutely will. And I think that, you know, the reason I haven't used them yet is probably because we've had so much going on. It's hard to just section off time to actually, you know, focus on them. But it's actually those tools, and I do see a little tools like Hazel. Fantastic application that in some ways is so simple, right? Just moving folders around your system. But that can be really powerful. And I think it's about connecting those things up. And I think this is where a lot of people, I mean, a lot of guys who are, you know, who are geeky have been doing this for a long time. You know, they've figured out ways to, you know, automate a process of, you know, move this file over here and send this for transcription and, you know, run this in through Audacity and give it a clean up on a phonic or whatever it is. You know, you've kind of figured out the system to do it. But I think for people like me, you know, I'm a tech guy, but I'm not a geek. So what I don't do is I don't dig that deeply into a lot of that stuff. And I find that when I do, I don't really know what I'm doing. Like I go to Mac shortcuts and I am lost. I'm like, right, okay. I feel like I've got an IKEA flat pack unit in front of me and I'm trying to work out why there's a pointy thing and why there's a bit of wood, and neither of the two of them seem to make any connection with each other. And I'm sitting there going, what do I do? And all I want to do is build whatever the hell this thing is.
The best tip I can give anyone is something that someone just offhandedly told me, and it has stuck with me forever. Start with the end result and work backwards. A lot of times we try to start from where we are right now and work to the end result, and things I get distracted or things don't work. So I'm like, you know, this isn't working right for me. So I start with, where do I want my files to end up at? And then I work backwards. Well, where are those files initially? Now, how do I put that together? And that's going back to what you had brought up, a way that, you know, could be employment. Like, you may not go set up a Hazel rule, but why couldn't you pay someone to go set up those Hazel rules for you and then send that to you? And that's just a different type of working using AI or some of these other tools that are available.
Well, I was going to say, let's get a person in. And actually, I think you're right. I think that's the answer. And maybe this is what, you know, this is maybe what Satya's talking about. You know, this is where the jobs come from of the future. Because actually, that's the point. You know, not everybody will understand all this, will understand how to use it, but absolutely can see the benefits of using it. Mm-hmm. It's just that they don't know how to get from A to B. And if you're in that position where you don't know how to get from A to B, can I just get somebody else to do it? Yes. Now, I know that there are people who will say, well, you should try and figure this out for yourself. But actually, you know what? I've got a busy life. You know, I've got cookies to eat. I've got things to do. there's a lot of stuff on Netflix I haven't seen yet. You know, there's things I want to do with my life, and it's not all involving, you know, coding in a computer. So it'd be kind of cool to get somebody in to do that. So maybe there you go. That's it. I think
just different
get
type
those
of
invoices
job.
Out. That's what I say. Not to there me, but to other people.
Yes, yes.
Excellent idea. I am Scottish. I pay for nothing. You know that, right? I pay people in whiskey. That's usually how it works.
There you go.
If that works for you, then there we go. It's okay whiskey. I mean, it's Scotch, you know, it'll do. Now, listen, I want to bring in at this point Sinan Aral. This is the author of The Hype Machine, How Social Media Disrupts Our Elections, Our Economy, and Our Health, and How We Must Adapt. That's definitely not a short book title. That's pretty much the whole first chapter, I think. But that's the name of the book. He's written it, and he was talking to Yahoo News about this announcement. And I wanted to play this in because this takes us in an interesting direction here in this conversation. He says that Microsoft is certainly up and running now with the technology that they have developed.
$1 billion to start, $10 billion to follow on in the investment. And as we have seen recently, it has Google shook a little bit, calling a Code Red, calling big names back to the company to talk about it, to think about strategy. And there's a good reason for that. ChatGPT is potentially an existential threat to Google's business because Google relies 60% of its revenue on search, and ChatGPT offers an alternative to search, which is a one-stop question answering shop powered by AI. Microsoft has been struggling to compete on search with Bing, although they've been doing better over the years, but this could change the game of search entirely, which is core to Google's business.
So do you think it's fair to say that Google has become a little bit complacent over the years when it came to Google search and that they just didn't really see anyone out there competing?
Yes and no. Maybe they're looking at a different way, because one thing that, was popular with Google a couple of years ago, and I have not heard a lot about it, was remember Google I.O., how they showed how you can use Google Assistant to call and book you a reservation at a restaurant?
Yeah, that's right.
That I think, if Google played on that a little more, could help them a lot. Or now you can have your Pixel phone wait on hold for you, so you don't have to worry about that. They have become complacent, but I think also Google's been concerned about, if we release something that has all this data on people, right now we're getting a lot of flack, at least here in the US, about, you know, how much data we're capturing on people and how much data we have on people. What are people going to say when you can just type in there, you know, what did I have for my 17th birthday 20 years ago or whatever, and Google can spit that information out to you and give that to you. So it'll be interesting to see what the bigwigs and people who are more data conscious than what I am will say when Google starts releasing stuff. And are they going to be fair to Google and OpenAI at the same time?
So the way you're talking, it sounds to me that Microsoft and Bing are going to be champions of what's out there, whereas Google is going to be able to champion you. And your life, because it, essentially it has, as because we've all been Googling for so long and because we have accounts connected to these, you know, Google servers and everything else, and it's all connected really, you know, it has all this data on you. Is that the difference between Google and Microsoft in this case? That does Microsoft have the same amount of data? I mean, it must have an amount.
I would assume it has an amount, maybe not the same amount of data, because I think about, like, I don't know if you've played with it or not, but Google has these smart replies that you can use in Gmail that, you know, if someone sends you an email, it's a 2 to 4 word reply real quick that you can just tap on and then expand on. I'm sitting there thinking, if Google could go back and look at the current Gmail account that I'm using, has data from 2014, all the emails that I have sent and received since 2014, if Google could process that, Google could almost just reply to all my emails in the same tone that I would reply to those emails and me not have to do anything.
And that's the thing you were picking up on earlier with ChatGPT, right? That the tone is important, because when you're talking to someone like your colleague who said to you, hey, we know each other, and yet that email seemed a little formal.
Yep.
You wouldn't have that problem if the system is able to identify you clearly know this person. This is someone who you have maybe a bit of a laugh with, have a good relationship with, a good rapport with, and that tone comes through the email. So it does seem that Google could win this back if it plays this properly. I think a lot of people, though, I certainly am one of these people, I fear Google sometimes, because what they tend to do is they get a great idea in their head and then poof, it's gone. They just get rid of it. Yep. Stone dead, killed. And that's, and you think, well, bro, it's Google Stadia. Wow, that sounds amazing. Oh, it's dead. Right, yeah. Okay. Oh, well, moving on.
There's a whole website killed by Google that's dedicated to things that have been dead by Google. I think if Apple plays it right, Apple could be the solution that gives you those personal on-device results using a ChatGPT-like model, because, you know, we haven't heard anything about Apple being involved in this. And after listening to your show on Saturday regarding Siri shortcuts, I went and bought a couple of HomePod minis because I'm like, what can I use these HomePod minis for?
Hang on, are you listening to this, Apple? Are you hearing this? I'm getting you sales. Just saying. Hashtag.
Except I'm buying them third party. So, I mean, technically, Apple didn't get any sales.
Don't tell them that. We'll edit that out.
Well, actually, but you know what Apple, I mean? Like, Apple, it has all your personal data.
Yeah, well, but Apple have been kind of talking on this as well. So I don't know if you saw this story. But this was quite interesting. So Mike Rumor's reporting this. This is not a public event, but they are going to be holding an in-person annual AI summit for employees at the Steve Jobs Theatre. Now, apparently this is going to be happening next week. Now, when did this card? Yes, this article was published today. So this is going to be next week at the Steve Jobs Theatre. It's the first fully live in-person event. A lot of people focusing on that. That's the first big event happening at the company's Apple Park headquarters post-COVID. But this one is purely for employees only, so it's not going to be live streamed at all. As well as inviting staff, the in-person summit will also be live streamed to employees unable to attend. Let's hope someone's recording it. The last fully live... Oh, never mind, I'm not caring about that. But what does it say? Yeah, Apple invited a limited number of developers to attend at WWDC 20. Oh, that's all something else. But yeah, the point is that this is an event, and it says it comes at a time when the tech industry excitement surrounding Microsoft's ChatGPT and Google's recent announcement as well with its own Lambda-powered AI chatbot called Bard is really, it's all hotting up. And essentially this is maybe Apple's dipping the toe into, although I don't think it's dipping the toe, I'm sure it's been doing this for a while. But it maybe this is the time they're going to discuss it, because we know, or at least, please, this year we'll get, I can finally turn around and say Apple Glasses here. Please, can it happen? Because I think everyone's sick of me talking about it. But this is going to be something that they're involved in. Although it does seem, looking at Siri, right, and just looking at Siri and its capabilities and how not terrible, I don't like to use the word terrible. I think she's just not as... streetwise or worldly knowledgeable, whatever you want to say, right? Because it's not been trained in that way. It's not been built in that way. It's different. And privacy is at the heart of what Apple does.
Yes.
How is it going to marry all of that, you know, privacy and it's real bedrock of what Apple's about with essentially opening up to something that is either public as an open source like OpenAI or something that is going to essentially consume lots of public data. I don't know how you marry that.
Maybe that's the true iPhone Ultra. Maybe you have to have that Ultra to have that manpower or that processing power in order to keep everything on device and still give the results that people want. So we'll see later this year.
It's going to be interesting. This year, I mean, I said at the beginning of the year, perhaps naively, certainly in my case, but, you know, I certainly remember saying at the beginning of the year, this is the year for AI to really take off. And not necessarily even in device form, although I think devices will come from this. But I think our smartphones, our devices that we own, will really be the powerhouses here. They already are. And they collect so much data about us. And they're certainly capable of doing all of this. But it's just such a really interesting time. This particular year is going to be, this is a real milestone. This is pivot point. We're going to look back on 2022, or where are we, 2023? That's the one. We're going to look back at this year. I'll remember it. I will remember it. So I'll say that year, that whatever year that was, it was the most important year. But it is. It's going to be a really important year. It's going to be a really important marker because this is the time when we're starting to see that shift away from what will be seen as the old approach to search, which, you know, for many of us for a long time was the only way to search. I searched for a cake recipe to make, you know, apple strudel, and I got 70 billion results, as opposed to here we are, there's the answer. And, you know, I mean, the only thing that's not doing is reaching out, you know, grabbing your mixing bowl and making it for you.
It would be nice if it asked you follow-up questions. What ingredients do you have? One time I threw in some ingredients I had in the fridge with ChatGPT. It said, I have a side of rice. What can I make with this? And it gave me a not too horrible recipe that I was able to follow easily and use some food that needed to be used in the refrigerator. And when I can just quickly search that by either speaking to the air with one of these voice-activated assistants or typing in a search result, I think it's going to revolutionize the experience both textually and audibly as well.
We're not really touching on the big story here, which a lot of tech journalists are focusing on, and that is the upcoming war between Google and Microsoft on this, and possibly Apple will chuck their hat in the ring as well, you know, and have a square go. I don't know, but, you know, I'm quite excited by that because I think this is going to be a really interesting time. It's going to hot up the competition. It's going to change things up. It's going to make technology more interesting. I just hope it's accessible. I hope all of the options are accessible. I'm kind of I'm going to give a bit of leeway on this because I think if Apple are involved in any way, of course it will be accessible. I would immediately assume that. And Microsoft these days especially. Google, yeah, okay, let's say yes, yeah, right? Let's just say it will be. Yeah. I think that the big tech companies, I feel confident enough to know that, you know, the website they're going to build for this is going to work for us. Like, immediately I'm thinking about that chat and compose feature in Edge and thinking, okay, so that's a sidebar. So how's that going to work with, you know, and how's that going to link in with, you know, I'm just imagining me, you know, jumping around like a clown in a minefield around, you know, on this Edge browser with my screen reader trying to figure out where I am. That's the bit that worries me.
Yeah, I was astounded with how accessible ChatGPT was by default. Yeah, there's some unlabeled buttons. And don't get me wrong, it would be nice if they were all labeled. But then, for example, in a similar vein, I went to 11 Labs the other day and was playing with their voice. And you know what? That whole interface is it looks very accessible to me. Like, and maybe that just comes down from guidelines of building things on some of the infrastructure that's available now, that naturally it's just going to be accessible unless you purposely try to break it.
I know you sent me a message following up on one of our listeners' concerns around the Blind Shell Classic. We're going to play that in on tomorrow's show. And that subject about, which we haven't really had a chance to get into today, around not just artificial intelligence in terms of search, but the capability it has to replicate our voice. I mean, what was the one I saw the other day? Take images and turn them into moving pictures, as in video. I saw someone had uploaded six. In this particular example, there were six pictures of a teddy bear. And the teddy bear in one video, in one picture, was just lying down. The next one, it was sitting up. The next one, it was standing. Mm-hmm. And they had just taken the six pictures of this teddy bear in various poses. And then it turned it into a video where the teddy bear was walking around. I mean, it is just mind-blowing how this technology is moving. It's where it's going.
It sure makes me second guess what is reality anymore.
Well, that's the next big question. Yeah, I mean, I've been asking myself that for some time, but now I really am concerned. However, the concerns are for another day. I'm excited about the technology. Google are about to unveil, maybe even by now will have unveiled their equivalent, which is called Bard. And the CEO calls it an experimental conversational AI service, but noted that it was still being tested by a small group of testers and will only receive a wider launch in the coming weeks. We'll bring you all the news on that. Michael, please come back soon. It's been really good geeking out with you today.
Thanks a lot.
That's it for today. Feedback at doubletaponair.com. 1-877-803-4567 is the listener line number. Get in touch. Tell us your thoughts. Catch you again tomorrow.
Love Double Tap? Did you know we're on the TV too? Check out brand new episodes of Double Tap TV on AMI TV every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, or binge on all episodes online at ami.ca/Double Tap. We're also on YouTube. Search for Double Tap to catch our episodes there too.
Join us weekly for The Pulse with host Juita Gupta, who brings us closer to issues impacting the disability community across Canada. Watch The Pulse on YouTube or listen wherever you download your AMI podcasts.